Today on The Grave Talks, The Dead Down Under, a conversation with Lee Phillips. Lee Phillips is a researcher of the supernatural who makes his home in Brisbane, Australia. When Lee was a small boy, he had a supernatural encounter with his grandfather who had passed away, which sparked his interest in the paranormal for the first time. While he was staying at his grandmother's house, he received a visitation from his grandfather's spirit, who asked him how he was doing and if he required a drink. When his parents got home, Lee asked them who had stopped by to see him, because he did not know his grandfather, which caused them to glance at each other in a perplexed manner. Due to the fact that there was no one else there in the house other than the older brother and grandmother, they did not know. His father asked him to describe the man, and in response, shown his son a photograph of his grandfather that had been kept in a secret location. This was the beginning of a search that would last a lifetime to find answers to questions regarding the supernatural.
For me, I was probably about 8 years old. I was staying at my grand's, which was a grand's house in London. It was a pre-war house. They had been bombed, etc. During the Blitz, a plane had gone down in the back, in the garden behind them. They had the old Anderson shelter, etc. So they had a graveyard literally just up the road. So I stayed there one Saturday night. My parents had gone into London itself for a function, and I stayed in my dad's room, and some man came into my room, woke me up, the light was turned on, and asked me if I'd like a glass of water. And when you're only 8 years old, you're very, very innocent. And I said, yeah, okay. And then he said, okay, good night. And the light went off and I went back to sleep. So my mum and dad arrived back the next morning. And I said, who was this man that came into my room? And my gran was widowed, and my dad and mum said, well, no one. There's no one. Only you and your brother are staying there for the night. And I said, no, this man came in. As you do as a child, you're very adamant when everyone's looking at you like you're crazy.
Yeah.
No, this man came in. I could describe him. And my gran, for whatever reason, had no photos of her husband around, my granddad. He actually died when my father was about 13, 14. So I started, and my dad goes, well, can you describe this person? And I'm like, well, this and this and this. And everyone's looking at me as if I'm some sort of mad 8-year-old child. And my dad produces a picture and he goes, is this the man? I said, that's the man. That I told you, that's the man, as an 8-year-old, as you do, thinking I'm not mad.
Sure.
And he goes, that's your grandfather. And I said, well, this man, and I'd never seen a photo before in my life. The photo that he actually pulled out was on a high up cabinet and it was actually flat. So there was no way I'd ever seen it. And I said, well, that's the man. That's the man that came into my room. I was in your room, Dad, where you used to stay, where you grew up. That man came in and asked me for a drink. And from then on in the house, my parents' pets, their dogs, they felt uneasy in the house. Things would happen upstairs in the house, and my gran would blame me and my brother for being naughty little boys. A lot of the plants would die in the upstairs, and we'd get the blame for everything, as you think they run away young lads.
Sure.
And there was always a sense there was someone else there. Now, the experience wasn't scary. It was as real as seeing someone standing next to your bed. You okay? Would you like a drink of water? And yeah. It was a calm. There was none of this fear. It was a very, very calm, normal experience. Well, I knew that my mum and dad were staying in a hotel in Inner London, so there wasn't them. My gran never had anyone else there. She didn't want to talk about it. She was very, no, that's rubbish, etc., and just dismissed it. But numerous other things had happened when we'd go and visit, and me and my brother would go upstairs and we'd see doors close, things bang, and it was just, but it wasn't like you see on the TV show, scary. It was just, hey, someone's here. And that got me interested then at 8 years old into, well, hold on. That was a pretty cool experience. So at such a young age, you he went on, and my family became very religious at one point at about 12 years old. And we started to go to church and to Sunday school and the church youth club. And I had a fascination with the paranormal, with horror, with all those sort of things at that age. It was something that was I felt drawn to. It was something that I was interested in because I was always looking for more answers. There's more out there than what we're told. And there was a curate who used to run the Sunday youth club. And me and him would sit there and we would have these, at a very young age, these incredible theology discussions. I'd say, well, what happens after you die? And the questions a child asks, where do we go? What happens? And he would, and I'd say, look, I've seen ghosts. And he was an amazing guy that would actually sit there and have these discussions with me, that which were of a higher level than the other people reading their scriptures and filling out their little worksheets as a young lad. And that really pushed me then into asking questions, looking around, what else is there in the world that we know? A lot more onto the parapsychology side of things, how humans react in situations. Because we only know how such a small amount of our own brain works. So I'm fascinated with how humans react and work together in alleged haunted locations. That interests me. And then I just joined a group over here, and the first investigation I had, I caught a shadow figure.
Interesting.
Which is, as they say, is almost the money shot on an old little camcorder. We know that no one else was down this part of this old heritage area. It was like a heritage center where they have these old buildings that have been moved in. Full size shadow figure puts their head around, the whole body comes round the building and back again. And I didn't notice it at first. You go home, you look at your tapes, I wonder what I've got. Because 9 times out of 10, you never catch anything. And then this figure, and my partner actually noticed it. She said, there's someone put their head around there. But it wasn't a human figure. It was a black shape of a humanoid sort of figure. Now, earlier in the video, we've actually got a human walking down there. So we knew, you could tell distinct difference. And that really pushed it for me to get into the cinematography and dig a lot deeper into what is paranormal.
Yeah. So that's I want to get to that part, because there's a lot of interesting things I'm sure we can discuss there. I want to talk a little bit more about childhood and when you had that experience at the age of 8. You were old enough, obviously, to understand this. You know, this is different. This is not normal to see your deceased grandfather showing up and asking you if you needed a drink. Did he bring you a drink, by the way, is my next question.
I can't remember if I got a drink. I think there was water there, which is actually the strange thing, but that could have been dropped in by my gran.
Sure.
But it was as if it was a real, how can I say, as if a real person had come in.
Yeah.
They're my brother's younger than me. He's 2 years younger than me, so it wasn't him. And the actual doors in the house, I've got quite high handles. They were very high doors in the pre-war English homes. And there's no way my brother, who was probably 5, 6 at the time, could have opened that door.
Sure.
He couldn't have reached it. So there was no, it had to be an adult. My grandmother was a very short lady. And I would have known the difference between her and this person. So it was definitely male. And like I said, and it was as clear as if someone really came into the room.
Why do you think your grandmother was so dismissive of it?
I don't know. Like I said, I don't know, because my grandfather died before I was born. So I said my father himself was only 14 at the time. I do not know. Maybe it was fear. I don't know what their relationship was like at the end, so I won't speculate on that. But she was extremely dismissive. My father was quite open to it, and like he was the one, like I said, that actually said to me, well, can you describe the person? And obviously we went through that process.
Had your father ever had any experiences of the sort?
To my knowledge, nothing at all. It's nothing at all. My mum's side of the family, there is There is some of them that are, would you use the term loosely, psychic, or they can... My mother herself, when I was living in the UK, and she was actually living in Australia at the time, she rang me up once and she said, if you've just gone and bought a grey silver car, and this is to the time before emails and internet, so you had a landline, sure, and there was an echo, there was a delay on the landline, nothing like the technology we have nowadays.
Yeah.
And to ring, you had to take a loan out because it was so expensive. So she said to me, she goes, have you bought a car? And my wife at the time and me were saying, yes, we bought a grey silver vehicle last week. So there is a psychic sort of connection. This is before Facebook. There's no way she would have known.
Sure.
And all those, there was no social media back then. So there is a psychic abilities, I would say, to a certain point within my mum's side of the family, yes, but my father, no. No, just an average working class lad that sees things very black and white.
Sure. So you had these experiences as a child. Obviously, you ended up going down the investigative route. Were there other occurrences that you had growing up that continued to further that curiosity into the world of the paranormal?
Yeah, when I used to go to the old, going back a long time, I'd be a member of a scout group in the UK, and I was always the kid that would go walk through the graveyard, and it never bothered me. It was always like, oh, this feels quite homely.
Sure, yes, exactly.
The other kids are all running and jumping over the fence and screaming down the street.
You're finding
peace.
I'd be the guy
walking along quite homely going, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I've always had... should I say, I wouldn't say the darker side of things. I've always had an interest with the other side, and that's probably the best way of saying it, how, sure, what happens. And it's never been uncomfortable. It's never scared me. And that's the thing that I find interesting the most. Some people are petrified of knowing or petrified in investigations. To me, it's an adrenaline buzz. But also, it feels normal, if that makes sense, if that's probably the word to use. It doesn't scare me.
Sure.
I feel comfortable with it.
Mm. One would almost have to be at that kind of level of calm to reasonably, you know, examine what is going on around them. If you're very high anxiety or you're ready just to get the heck out of there, it'd be hard to hear the quiet and see if there's anything that's peeking out within the confines of where you're at.
Exactly. And that's the reason why you'd look at things calmly. You can look at it rationally. Uh-huh. Not everything's paranormal. Most things, 90+% of things, can be easily accounted for.
And that's an interesting one. I always like to ask that question. In your experiences, have you ever had those moments where you really thought this is something paranormal? That definitely is going to be something. And the more you dug and the more you looked to make sure you were right or to just confirm it, you discovered, oh my gosh, I can't believe I thought that was paranormal. But it was very easily explainable.
Oh yes, you go to older buildings and you hear the wind, etc., or tapping, and you think, oh, that was paranormal. Then you go back and you listen to your evidence, etc., and it was nothing at all. Like, there's one thing I say when I'm talking to people who just come into the paranormal. If you went to a case and it's a old lady who's a widow, and the curtain blows at 3 o'clock every afternoon when she sits by the window where her and her deceased husband had a cup of tea, you know it's not paranormal. You know it's the wind blowing. Do you tell her that and take away that dream and that memory for her? Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff, like I said, most stuff isn't paranormal. And I believe that, but it's something like that, you show the empathy and the care to let that person go with the dream, if that makes sense.
I completely agree. I mean, and that's something, it's not paranormal. But it's along the lines of when someone is dealing with Alzheimer's, or dementia, and they believe, you know, there's boats outside the window. That's the example I have, because that's what my grandmother did at one point. Mm-hmm. We weren't, the water was several miles down the road, but she could swear she was seeing sailboats out the window, and then the Olsen boys from her childhood were going to be coming up, and she saw them earlier in the day. And so many people, it just frustrates me. No, there's no water there. They're dead. And like, no, just go along with it. Let them have the peace of what time they have left. And just, if this is what their reality is, let them have the reality. That doesn't hurt anything.
Exactly. And I believe that's, it's not faking evidence. You're letting someone have what they believe is their reality. And if it makes that lady happy sitting by the window thinking it's her husband sitting there, what harm is there?
Exactly.
What harm is there? And I think that at times there is empathy missing in the field, where people go rushing around and they actually forget that when you do a house investigation or something, that that person has feelings and beliefs, and you don't even know their full backstory. Mm-hmm. And there at times you have to show a lot of empathy and understanding. Let her have a dream. There is no harm in that at all.
I completely agree. You can walk away from that personally going, I know this isn't paranormal, but I don't need to tell them that. You know,
it's a win for you.
It is. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's a win, and you've done something good for someone. And I think in this field that at times is missing, with too many people chasing and chasing and chasing. I'm lucky that I've caught some good stuff. I've caught some genuinely good stuff, so I can be selective on what I want to do, because I want that next buzz. So I'll be selective in where I go to get that.
Sure. You had mentioned earlier your fascination with the human reaction to places that are allegedly haunted, and the way that people behave in such situations. I know you were involved in a Paraflix piece about that. Tell me the general outline, the general idea of going in and trying to document that. How did that all work?
Well, I just had an idea, and there was an old inn pub at a place called Gatton, just west of Brisbane where I live. And we'd all been in there, and there'd been activity, and I wanted to get into making documentaries. But I wanted to do something different. I didn't want a camera with night vision following around investigators. That's been done a million times, and there's a lot of better people out there that do that than me.
Sure.
And I wanted a different angle. And this was my first film down the rabbit hole I'd ever made. I knew the basics of camera work, and I knew what I wanted to do, and et cetera. So I pulled together 6 to 8 people, and we didn't tell them where they were going to be. And we put them into this hotel. We picked them up. We took them to this hotel. And pretty much we gave them hell for 2 days. So it was interesting. It was a mix of people. It was believers, non-believers, some very big skeptics, people that weren't sure. I was looking for a cross-reference of society.
Sure.
And to see how they would react in different challenges. Now, it's not a reality TV thing. We would put them in a room with some alleged haunted objects. Some things were of a paranormal subject. Some of them weren't. We had a mirror there that we'd picked up from eBay, and we told them it was a haunted mirror. And the point of it was to see how these people will react around what they perceive is paranormal. And to start off with, the skeptics in the groups are very much knowing how they were picking things out. But as things outside of our control started to happen, different smells people would get, etc., it was different how their attitudes changed. And it was one of the women on it had was very much into belief, and she was saying to me, I've been given this bracelet to protect me, and it's going to keep me safe and everything. But I was talking, and it was how the belief system came out. And I said, well, if I gave you a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle and told you it's been blessed by someone, you're going to go into that experiment with the same belief.
Yeah.
And it was how humans, and it was very much how humans act. And there was a very good clip in it where a guy called Colin, a skeptic, lovely guy, big skeptic, would ask questions. He'd come from a religious school, etc., probably around my age, in his early 50s. And we put him into a room at the back of this hotel. Now, the hotel had originally been moved onto a site that was originally a piggery market sort of place. And we put him into this situation where he was blindfolded. He had a spirit box in his ears, pitch black. And there was just security cameras watching him, and he was mic'd up. And everyone else was a good 20 meters away. And I'm watching back the tapings after we've actually taped it in when we're in editing process. And this guy is a big skeptic, absolutely big, but he would look at things rationally. Someone goes to him in the film, hello. And he turns around with noise cancelling earphones on and he goes, oh, hello. And we sat there, me and my partner and my son, and we watched this video for about an hour. This 10-second clip going, who said hello? Mm-hmm. There's no one there. No, the door was sealed shut. There was a big room. There was no one around. There was no vehicles. Someone said, he's heard someone say hello. And he's turned and looked at the camera going, oh, hello. As if he was the one with what it was. And that was what we were looking at, how people reacted. The building that was there before this pub had been burnt down. And three other people went in, did a very similar experiment to what Colin did. And they could smell burning. Now, they were all separate. They never got to speak to each other to tell their experiences. And they all came out and said, I can smell burning. I can smell burning. Now, they didn't know the history of the place, obviously, because it was kept a secret. Now, at what point is the human brain picking something up? Is there a connection there? And that is what I was looking for. Why was someone here, clearly hear a hello, and they'll actually turn and answer with noise-canceling earphones on, with a spirit box blasting through it with that white noise? He clearly heard it. These other people could clearly smell the smoke from a burning building.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, what's going on with the human psyche that we were actually picking this up? Because they didn't know the full history of the building. We never told them.
Sure.
And we would try to give them some fake stuff to see if they would buy it. And as the filming went on, they actually drifted more towards, their senses became more aligned towards picking up the paranormal. And it was very strange. We did a group thing where one had their ears blocked off, one had their eyes, etc., one had their mouth. So they had to work as one, but we took away the senses. So four people had to work as one person, each of them lost a sense. And it was amazing to watch how they started to connect with each other, and they were connecting around this alleged paranormal, and I believe it's haunted, building. And it was very interesting to see their reactions afterwards. They would go, well, what happened? I experienced this. Even a skeptic, I can't explain that. And that's the best thing a skeptic will say to you is, I can't explain what happened to me.
Sure.
And it was a very, and that interests me, is how the human psyche, how the psychology of the whole field reacts, how people react with it. And I don't mean you hear a door bang and someone screams running out the door, but it's how humans interact with the paranormal. And that really fascinates me. What goes to their brain, how they work, is it fight or flight? Those sort of emotions that go through people that will suddenly have like a psychic experience that have shown no interest in it. There seems to be some bridge there that we don't fully understand.
Is it just the fact that when you put someone into that situation, you're telling them, okay, go do this. This is your only task. This is all you need to focus on right now, is just doing this. It's giving permission to not have to be thinking about the rest of life for that moment in time. All the distractions, all the white noise, pardon the pun, that just comes from life around us. When you're in a situation like that and you're participating in that, you're very present. You're very much in the moment of that. Is that something where it allows us to pick up on those things in much, or be tuned into that at a much stronger signal than we would be otherwise? Almost, if you think back to tuning a radio, and you know, you're kind of getting the station in at first, and then you tune it just right, and then there it comes in perfectly. Do you think we live life most of the time where it's kind of coming in, it's there, then that we sometimes have paranormal experiences, this or that, but when you can dedicate yourself 100% to just trying to absorb that type of environment, the things just come through a lot clearer, no matter where you are, haunted or not, with the assumption that maybe every place is haunted.
Yes, we found that, because when they were channeled and they were actually in that environment, yes, we did find that they became more observant. Like I said, even the skeptics became more observant, and they start to question their surroundings. And that was one of the cool things to see, is when people would start saying, hold on, I don't believe in this, or there's a rational reason, but why did that just happen? And like you said, because they would have been they were focused on the environment, that they had, there was nothing else around them to distract them. And I think, and it's like this, as you probably would know, when people say, I saw something out the corner of my eye. But when you put them into a darkened room on their own, with just an audio recorder and a camera, how much more do they see? When they start focusing in, their senses start to work, they start to smell things, feel things. So yes, I believe that's very much the case, especially in the modern world where everyone is such in a rush.
Yeah, and very distracted by everything at all times. When you're in a situation like this, and this goes to the area of, well, what is it that they're experiencing? Is it spirits that once resided there, were in the area, are just passing through? Or can people create their own hauntings just by willing it, wanting it, being in an environment where they almost expect it? Can that either be a beacon that things then come in, or can our own energy, our own psyche, create occurrences around us that really, it's not Uncle Joe. It's something within us that's creating something that's going back and forth, its own thing, if you will.
I've done cases before, and I call it, obviously living in Australia with all these very nasty animals that we've had, the snake phobia is that if your parents are petrified of snakes and spiders, and we have some big ones over here, that you become scared of it. So by that I mean is you start, if your parents or someone close to you is fearful of the paranormal or something, it feeds down to the children. And we've seen this in cases where the mother is petrified of something and she's been up watching horror movies all night, etc., and then the young children become scared of the same thing. So I believe that there is a lot of the paranormal, I would say, from my experience in life, I do believe that humans can manifest things themselves. I do think there is a strong case for that. But as they say, we only understand how a small part of our brain works. So we don't fully understand how our brain as humans works. Who's to say we can't do these things? I also like to work on the theory of, is there alternate timelines? When we go into a prison or a hospital, we're knocking on the walls everywhere going, hello, can you give us a name? How do we not know someone on a separate timeline is going, this place is haunted, someone's knocking on the walls? You know, it's a funny idea.
Yeah.
But it's something that we look at, is we don't understand even fully how, and I was having this discussion last night actually before we came on here, we don't fully understand how time works. We believe it's a lateral thing, we go past, present, future. So who's to say there isn't alternate timelines? Mm-hmm. You know, of like the residual thing. I've done a case before, these people used to see this image of a gardener going over to the flower bed. Who's not to say in an alternate timeline that he's just doing his job, and we're seeing that the timelines have become close together, that he's just doing his job and we're all the ghosts? So it's, yeah. But I do believe, going back to the original point, that I do believe in cases that I've investigated that humans can manifest their own spirits, energy, whether it's negative or positive. I think it's possible. I think it's possible. But there's also that 1-2% that, as you know, Tony, we can never explain.
Sure.
You know, and we've all had those experiences when we've sat there and gone, what just happened? But I do think humans have a lot of control over it with their brains. We subconsciously do so much. And the control part of our brain controls so much what we do. As a psychologist said to me once, a golfer, he said, how good do you think he is when he hits that ball 2 inches from the pin? But he goes, he's not doing that. He's hit a million golf balls on the golf course, and the control part, the prehistoric part of his brain, has took over. He said it's like when you watch a footballer dribbling down the line. He's not knowingly doing that. It's the control part of his brain that's kicked in and has shown him how to do it. So we don't know, is there a part of our brain that can manifest these things, you know, and that some people can control it in a certain way. We still, like I said, we still don't have those answers to how our brain fully works.
Sure. There's so many possibilities, obviously, with this, and you know this well. Almost anybody who's in this world in one way, shape, or form goes in thinking, oh, we're going to figure out some answers here. And you just end up with far more questions.
Yes. Than yes. And that's why I called my first film Down the Rabbit Hole, because yep. It literally was. Once you went down there,
yeah,
there were so many different avenues we could have gone down. And it was literally that, because we came up with more questions than answers. And when you start seeing someone who is a skeptic having a paranormal experience, one, it's a pretty cool thing to see. And two, it's like, well, how did that happen? And that's the thing. You start going back over all your microphones, you're looking at everything. There's no way this could have happened. There's no way at all this could have happened. Or an experienced investigator was doing an experiment and just collapsed, fainted. Someone who's been in the field for 20 years,
sure.
And they just, bang, they went down on the floor. Now, you would expect, now that person's a pretty genuine person, and you would expect, well, they would know how to deal with this. So what happened to them? So like you said, we ended up with more answers, so more questions than we actually had answers at the end of it. And it's something I would like to pursue further, because I think to see how humans react in these environments is interesting. And to keep it as a raw form, not to use celebrities, but to use people from off the street, average Joes, I think it gives it a lot more credibility. It gives it that there's no script. You just put them in there, and it's almost like a big game of The Sims. You just drop them in and let them go, and you find you get a lot more activity. And to see how they themselves problem solve what's happening around them.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation. In part two, Lee is about to release a film called The House of Lost Souls, based on a residential property in Australia, and how it affected the family psychologically. We discuss that in part two of our conversation. You can hear it by being a Gravekeeper. You can sign up to V1 through Apple Podcasts, even try it for 3 days. Get access to all of our conversations, part one, part two, the entire archive, all of it commercial free, as well as advanced episodes of the show released to you well before the public. Start binging today, either at Apple Podcasts on our channel there or patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.